All right, we're going to start this right over again. Okay, hello. This is the Naptown Eddie Show. I'm your host, Eddie Parker, a.k.a. Naptown Eddie. I'm here with America's toughest principal, CEO, and founder of Richard Wright Public Charter Schools. Ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Marco Clark. Dr. Clark, how you doing, sir?
I'm fantastic. How are you?
I'm doing fine. I'm doing fine. It's a pleasure talking to you. Sorry about last week. You know, I'm glad we able to hook up today.
Absolutely. You know, things happen. Technical stuff happens. We don't worry about that. It's about the mission that we are.
That's right. That's right. And, how's everything out in D.C.? As far as the weather so far?
Well, as far as the weather goes, we're fine. Everything else seems to be chaotic, from the politics to education and to the crime. I mean, it's just a lot going on in the city, which is not uncommon to any other urban city, but it's just some things I think we can do as a community to make things better.
Okay, and what are the things that we can do as a community to make things better, sir?
Well, one of the things is that we really got to start putting the hard truth on the table and begin to talk about some of the challenges that we have as citizens in our respective cities, citizens in this country, and really begin to work together in a unified manner. Part of what my mission is to change the course of education, and we understand that education is the foundation of every career, and if we don't fix education first, then I think we've lost in every other thing and every other category that we can imagine, because nothing can be successful unless we have a great educational system that is producing global competitors, which are our young people.
Now, how long have you been an educator, sir?
I've been educated over 20 years now, and I've worked in every sector from being a teacher all the way to a principal to becoming the founder and chief executive officer of my own charter school organization. And so I've worked in all facets of doing this, and as a nationwide speaker and advocate across the country, I've been working with districts to help improve the educational facets and outcomes of those districts, as well as many charter schools across this country.
Now, how often have you been to the White House during your career?
There was a time when we had unlimited access during the years of 2008 to 2016, after which I have not been there.
Okay, okay. Oh, I was about to say, go ahead. I thought you were going to say something else. But, So we have Betsy DeVos as the Secretary of Education right now. Is her platform working for African-American youth?
To be quite honest, I have no idea what her platform is. I've understood that there is a great ideology that she has a passion for independent schools of choice, but the effects of the administration has not trickled down in behalf of charter schools on my end, what I've seen with my organization, that will help us move forward. And so I'm not really clear what the platform is for our Secretary of Education.
Okay. Now, you as a student, you was, they said you was functionally illiterate. Did I get it right?
At 11 years old, I was told that, I was labeled that, which was ironic because at 10 years old, I was a spelling bee champion. Yeah. It's just interesting that misdiagnosis is happening across the country and across many districts with our young people killing their self-esteem, killing their drive, and taking away their thoughts for a solid aspiration. One of the things I think the teachers' unions have been very vile in keeping some incompetent folks in working. I think schools of choice have the power, especially in many places, to make the proper decisions, to push to get the right staff in, and no child should be left with an educator who does not have their best interests. On other hand, we beat up a lot of educators, that it's time to also make sure that we put the parents on the platform and make them accountable for their own children. I think the label that was given to me at 11 years old was very vile to me. It took my self-esteem. The fortunate part of it was that I had two great parents that were willing to continue to advocate for me. But what about the children whose parents are not advocating for them, and the leaders that are in these particular schools or organizations are not advocating properly, or afraid to put themselves out there for fear of their reputation and everything else that goes along with it? It's just so important that we begin to ramp up the need for parents to be involved, and then for parents to do their job, quite frankly, because that's not happening.
Now, is that the root of the problem in education now? Is the parents is not being involved?
It absolutely is the root of the problem. When you look at these many students, or we concentrate teenagers or students in general, we're finding that, you know, the parent is supposed to be the first teacher. Mm-hmm. If a student comes to school at pre-K or kindergarten and they don't know their ABCs or their 1, 2, 3s, they are already doomed for failure. Mm-hmm. When you look at a child, a parent that does not check homework or does not require their child to study each and every night, that child is doomed for failure. We spend a lot of time blaming teachers who have gone and become educated and worked many years to get into this field. They can't educate and raise and correct behaviors. They didn't sign up to be a disciplinarian. They signed up to educate. And in many ways, educators are being bashed by the community, bashed by parents, bashed by students, bashed by school districts because of the level of progress. But they're working from a deficit from the beginning. If a child shows up to your classroom 3 to 5 grade levels behind, and at the end of the year they've only progressed 2 grade levels, we blame the teacher. Well, I believe that the blame should have been in the parent. Mm-hmm. The blame should have been, why did the child come to school that far behind? And nobody's talking about that.
Mm-hmm. And you know, it's crazy that, you know, these kids now, they know a rap lyrics of a song, but ask them these little kids, ask them their ABCs or, you know, how to add or how to subtract. They can't do that. Isn't that crazy?
It's very crazy. I think it's criminal for a parent to coddle their children by rewarding them with expensive gifts and not holding them accountable for their academic success. When we look at many students, I have several that have transferred from different places, and what happens is I hear parents come in every day stating, I don't understand why my child can't be put in their right grade. Mm-hmm. I don't understand why my child, regardless of what the GPA is, that my child should not be promoted to go ahead and graduate, because you're hurting their feelings. You're taking away their energy. I think that's the most ludicrous thing that I've ever heard. What about the responsibility of understanding that education and knowledge is important? That's what's going to lead you throughout the rest of your life. Short-term gratification is not going to help. And so, but I think the laws on the books have not been strong enough for children behavior. I think the laws on the books have not been, or have been non-existent or not strong enough for the accountability of parents. And if we are going to straighten up our schools and our school systems, we're going to have to put something in place that holds the individuals who are ultimately responsible for the person that walks in that school, which are the parents, should be held accountable totally.
Mm-hmm. Now, what you said earlier, you know, parents rewarding these kids with expensive gifts and they not performing well in the classroom. You know who else said that? Dr. William Henry Cosby back in 2003-2004, and he caught a little flack off that. I don't know if you remember. He was like, well, quit buying these kids all these Jordans when they're bringing home F's, and, you know, it's something in that language, like, if they're performing poor in the schools, quit awarding them with expensive gifts. And he caught a little flack behind that. I just wanted to throw that in there. And just to hear you say that now, You know, I think it has to resonate within the African American parent, don't you think?
When you look at our history, and we look at, and we go back to Brown versus the Board of Education,
right,
up until 2018, when you look at the transition, we went up on the needle as far as desiring and wanting opportunities as an African American community, and that education was important, it was necessary, and it was deemed a shining light, to where we are now, that it has declined, and folks are not even interested in learning, or not interested in being educated. The decline is awful, and if you look at the decline in education, you can see the all of what it what resonates around it is our communities and how they are going backwards, the trash, the graffiti, the closing down of businesses and dilapidated buildings. This is a result of poor education and poor guidance and no accountability from parents to their children. The system itself has created an opportunity to make it easy, and sometimes we understand that things that are easy is not good. And so many children have advocates and lawyers that are advocating for the wrong thing, but what happens when that child is out of school and over 18? There are no advocates for the penal system. There's no people to step in. There's no lawyers that's going to say, well, we understand the child couldn't read. If they create if they are involved with a criminal act, they will serve the time that's on the mandated books. Mm-hmm. So I go back and say to the parents, When are we going to hold parents accountable for making sure that these children have a solid blueprint and that they are accountable for making sure that their children are following the blueprint that's necessary? I just ask that question over and over again.
Yeah. Because, see, it's just like they said back in the day, or they say now, it's like kids are having kids because the parents right now, they're trying to be their best friend. You feel me? You know, they want to be on Instagram with them, with their kids, or Facebook Live. They're not helping the child advance educationally. You know, is that correct?
Let's go back for a second, and you just mentioned some social media aspect. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the most, I think social media has become like a drug epidemic to our young people in our communities. First of all, let's hold everybody accountable for understanding that you're not supposed to even be able to have social media unless you're 18 years old. Thanks. That's the first thing. And that has been violated across the country, and nobody has said anything about that. That's the first thing. There was a reason why 18 was designated as a means for social media. And social media has accountable for more than the percentage of deaths between young people ages 14 and 19 has increased by 80% over the last 5 years. When you look at social media, it has contributed to over 70+% of violent fights and actions inside of public schools because of social media. When you look at the suicide rate amongst our young people in the last 5 years, it has increased because of the use of social media. But all in all, parents understand and they know that their child has a social media account, and they are on there with them supporting and breaking the law. We are teaching our children things that are wrong, and then we're asking for a different outcome. We've come to a place in this country where in the African-American community, there are no morals, no ethics, and no accountability for the next generation. We have to stop that. In my book, Parents, Where Are You? The kids are out of control. It is a raw and uncut version of saying we need parents to step back up. We need parents to hold our children accountable. And there must be an expectation, once again, that the generation that comes after you must do better than the generation that was before you.
That's right. That's exactly right. Now, when I was talking about social media, you know, because see, social media, there's a lot of bullying going on with these kids. And just like you said, the only way you should have social media, you should be 18 years or older. You know, you got these kids that are in, you know, middle school, they on social media, and then, you know, they getting cyberbullied. And like you said, the suicide rates are going up because of that. But, you know, in Richard Wright Public School, the one you are the founder and the CEO in, is there a lot of Do there be any? I'm pretty sure there'd be fights at the school, but is there any bullying epidemic going on around there, or?
We are a school with high standards and direction. I am a public school organization, and every now and then you're going in the high school level, secondary level, you're going to have some challenges with kids with back and forth. We do not have an epidemic of bullying because we spend a lot of our time focusing on building relationships and providing them with opportunities outside of the school place to network with folks that they can understand that that type of behavior is unacceptable, and that it needs to be followed to the rule that's inside of the organization. But we do have instances where we have dealt with cyberbullying on social media issues, platforms, stuff that rolls over from the weekend typically into that Monday morning. And so it's important that one of the things that we do is take a step back every Monday to kind of set the tone once again for the week, because I recognize that those children have spent 72 hours without proper oversight of parents, that they have spent 72 hours of being able to go and come as they please, and which means that they are walking back into an environment where expectations are high and rules are plentiful. And so in doing that, there's a weekly piece that we have to re-engage every Monday to make them understand where they are once again. And I think school leaders have to do that in general, because we are not only educating, we're parenting as well. And the parent at some moment has to take a child and say, stop, let me re-engage you and get you back in order and get you ready for the next step. And that is the gear that educators are going to have to do. Leaders of schools, leaders of school districts are going to have to do a re-engagement after the weekend, and understanding that that gap of a lack of parenting is detrimental to any success that you have in an educational system.
Yeah, and then that is true. Now, who was your influence, you know, your biggest influences coming up as an educator?
I've had many mentors. I can name, you know, several. Dr. Johnny Wilson was an inspiration to me when I was an undergraduate student at Clark Atlanta University. I can think of, you know, Dr. Freeman Rabowski, who happens to be a president of University of Maryland, Baltimore County. I think of Dr. Andre Bumley, who was responsible for guiding me as I became principal. Dr. Joe Clark, everybody knows him. Lean On Me is my inspiration. Those individuals have, and the list goes on of mentors that I have, because every great leader needs many mentors to guide them and to direct them, and to even just have someone to talk to in order to move. So those have been my heroes that understand that we can continue to push through this process, even when challenges are upon us, that we can just keep ourselves. This, like Rudyard Kipling said, is if you can keep believing what all about you is blaming theirs and losing it on you. Those are the kinds of things that we need to make sure that we are focusing on.
Now tell us about your book. Go ahead.
My book is out. It's been out. It's been doing great. We released it in April of this year, and I've sold over 2,000 copies across the country, and with school districts now buying a volume for their districts. It's called Parents, Where Are You? The Kids Are Out of Control, and I just think it's a blueprint for parents to read, to kind of understand where educators are coming from. Part of what I recognize is that parents may not understand the feeling that educators have, and so they needed a blueprint to be able to read to see whether or not they are doing exactly what these educators are complaining about and how they can fix and support the work that we do with their children. And so part of my book allotment goes back to scholarship funds at Richard Wright Public Charter School, so we can ensure that I can get those kids into college and help them remain there by providing some financial support.
Now, I know this is a crazy question, but I really want to ask. Now, what's the difference between a charter school and a public school? You know, I mean, there's you know, because there is a difference between the two here at the Midwest.
You know, the interesting thing is that I think it has become a misnomer. Charter schools are all public schools. That it is a public school, and people tend to, over the last 20-plus years, people have been saying that they're different. They're not different. Charter schools are an option. So if a child doesn't want to go to school in their particular neighborhood, then they choose another school to go to. Typically, charter schools have themes that they have that kids are interested in, and so it just provides them with an opportunity to learn something that they would like to learn. But other than that, we have a gamut, and for us, I would like to say charter schools are the most diverse because we take students that want to come, no matter what their academic success is, no matter where they live, as long as they are in the district that they reside in, they're able to choose a charter school. And so, for me, if a child is a high-level special needs student, I take them because they wanted to come. If a student is living in the poorest area of the city, I take them because they want to come. There is no selective neighborhood. Charter schools serve a population in a wide range, from kids academically, socially, and emotionally, to kids with their success that are on a high scale academically. So we are a most diverse group of schools, and I think charter schools is the way to go. This is face of fact. Public schools, the way we know education and the way we knew it from the past, is broken beyond repair. And so these districts are really trying to create new buildings, same policies, no results. And the reality is that we know it's a political realm, that every time it changes, city council, mayor, or whatever, there's another policy that changes within the school district. The great thing about charter schools is that it has a board of directors that's totally responsible for that one school organization. So even if the leader leaves, then there's a constant policy that will ensure that that program continues to thrive for years to come.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, once again, we are on the phone with Dr. Marco Clark, America's toughest principal from Washington, D.C. He is the founder and CEO of Richard Wright Public Charter Schools. Yes. Also, and Dr. Clark, I want to ask you, now you have grades K through 12 at the school, right?
I have grades 8 through 12.
8 through 12. Okay. I'm pretty sure there's a very, very low dropout rate at your school, right?
Absolutely, absolutely. We have a 5-year graduation rate of around 90%, and a 4-year graduation rate of 88%. And the reason I quote those numbers, I'm very proud of them, and just so folks know, every student that's a senior in August graduates in June with us. The graduation rates have been a up and down situation with school districts, because if you start with me in ninth grade and you transfer to another school in your 11th grade year, and for some reason you don't graduate, that hits my data, even though you're not in my school anymore. So typically, the 5-year, 4-year graduation rates have some disparity in them, because kids transfer and the high mobility with urban kids sort of stifles the data. And so if you transferred a couple of years ago and you decide to drop out after you go somewhere for a year, I'm not going to know that you dropped out, but yet and still it will reflect in my data since you started in ninth grade. But we're at the top of the graduation rate in the District of Columbia. That number, the district itself, the median number is 60%, and we are hovering at 90%. We're making things happen, and 88% with a 4-year graduation rate, which is making things happen for us.
Do you have any help from the District of Columbia officials over there as far as your school?
We are an independent LEA, but we do have support from the city council. We have a great relationship with the city council. We have an awesome authorizer who is responsible, who is our accountability. We are accountable to our agency, the D.C. Public Charter School Board, and they hold the charter, with they have the ability to open and close charters, and I think they do a great job of ensuring that accountability is there.
Now, you have uniforms at your school. You know, when I was going to school, I graduated from high school in the early 2000s, and while I was in middle school, Bill Clinton was talking about, you know, making students wear uniforms and stuff like that, which I didn't ever had a problem with it because it was a little easier because everybody at the school was looking alike. But nowadays, you will see charter schools and there'll be a lot of students wearing uniforms. And you have students wearing uniforms at your school, right?
I do.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Do you have here's another question. Do you have a sagging policy at your school?
Hey, repeat that.
Do you have a sagging policy?
I have one. Your pants must be pulled up. My young man must have a belt on. That is non-negotiable.
Okay. I just want to put that on there. And if you catch your student being insubordinate off your sagging policy, what's the consequences from that?
Well, you know, I think we have built an organization or relationship with students. You know, if a student's pants happens to sag some, the first opportunity is to have a conversation. I think if it becomes repetitive, we have what we call an intervention center to kind of redirect. Everything is about redirection for us. It's not my goal to put kids out of school, but have them in school. And we have an intervention center, and many people called it the detention room or in-school suspension back in the day, but that's not. We have an intervention center to help you redirect your mind and get you back in focus so that we can do what's necessary.
Okay. Well, once again, Dr. Marco Clark, once again, sir, it's been a pleasure to talk to you, to have you on this show. Hopefully you can come back. Hello?
I'll be glad to come back. I'll be glad to come back. And I appreciate you, and I appreciate you taking the time to make sure we get this information out there. It's so important that we continue to push the changes that's necessary in the African-American community, especially because there's so much work that needs to be done if we are ever looking to recover to the level that we have that our ancestors thought and hoped for, that it's so much work that needs to be done if we are ever going to recover to that level.
Yes, because see, our ancestors fought to, you know, they fought to read. You know, some of them died and got hung because they was caught reading. And now in this generation, we got all the access for reading. So let's take advantage of that, especially our youth out here. Am I right or wrong, Doc?
Let's take advantage of it. You are absolutely correct.
All right. How can everyone follow you, Doc? Dr. Picard?
They can follow me on Instagram at Dr. Marco Clark. You can follow me on Twitter at Dr. Marco Clark. Or you can find me on Facebook at Dr. Marco Clark. Or they can reach me at 860-997-6802 to order my book. And the book is only $15. You go to www.drmarcoclark.com. That's DrMarcoClark.com to purchase my book. The cost is $15. It's a great read, easy read, and I look forward to making sure that everybody gets that book in their hand so that we can continue to spread the word.
And also, do you have any speaking engagements going on?
I do. I have a list of those that will be coming up updated. I'm going to be traveling to have some things to do in Baltimore that's going to be coming up next month. I'm traveling to Atlanta this week. And just a list of several other tours. If you reach out to 860 you'll be able to find out that information through my publishers or how I'm probably going to be coming to a city near you. So reach out to him and be able to get that information going.
Okay, now when you come to Chicago, sir, let me know.
All right. I sure will. I've spent a lot of time doing work in Chicago. I spent time years ago working with Finger High School and Roberson. So I've spent some time in Chicago making sure that we work on some projects to help our young people.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, this is Marco Clark, and I am Eddie Parker, a.k.a. Nat Town Eddie, over and out.